Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. How big do you want your family to be? What's the optimum size in this country and in countries around the globe? Today, in conjunction with PRI's The World, we take a look at family choices. What factors are parents weighing these days when deciding whether to have more kids or no kids at all? Here's one factor that's crossed my mind more than once. The average cost of raising a child today, say hello to $1 million once college tuition's thrown in. Our guest today, Brian Kaplan, is the author of Selfish Reasons to Have More Kids, Why Being a Great Parent is Less Work and More Fun Than You Think. He's a professor of economics at George Mason University in Virginia, and he joins us from his home this morning. And Brian, nice to have you. Good morning.
Good morning.
S. Philip Morgan is a professor of sociology, and he's director of the Carolina Population Center at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He joins us from the campus news studio this morning. Philip, nice to have you, too. Good morning.
Thank you.
Brian, let's begin with you. I mean, despite the title of your book, Selfish Reasons to Have More Kids, you aren't necessarily advocating that. Do I have that right?
Actually, I am advocating that. So I mean, the whole point of the book is to say that start with whatever number of kids you were thinking of having, then listen to the evidence that I've got in the book, and the evidence, I say, points in the way of having more than you're planning. So it's not saying to have lots of kids, but to have more than you were originally planning.
And you're saying that why? What's the thesis? Tell us a little more about that.
Sure. The whole idea of the book is that parents put an enormous amount of effort into their kids these days. It's really historically unprecedented how much time and money parents put into their kids. But there's a whole lot of evidence from studies of twins and kids who are adopted showing that parents just don't have that much effect on how their kids turn out in the long run. So a lot of the suffering and sacrifices the parents make don't actually pay off.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is to say, look, you know, like if you like doing these things, great. But if you regard them as a burden, you don't have to feel guilty if you stop doing them. And once you take that burden off your own back that you place there, the idea of having another kid just isn't as scary as it is for most people.
Parents have gotten carried away, is what you're saying.
Yes, very carried away.
Yeah. You know, Philip, Philip Morgan, professor of sociology, director of the Carolina Population Center, what are the main factors that you think are at work here when a couple sits down to figure out how big a family should be?
Well, in the U.S., if you ask most young people how many children they would like to have, they give you an answer of two. After two, three is the most popular answer, and then one. And only about fewer than 10% would actually, as young people, say they intend no children. So people generally looking forward are anticipating having a family. They want to have a lifelong partner, and they want children to be part of that life. What happens is people live their lives. You don't have kids in lots. You tend to have them one at a time. So it gives you a chance to, after the first birth, to reassess how difficult parenting is for you. How does it change your lifestyle? For couples who haven't had any children and looking forward, they don't have the experience of parenthood. They don't know what it's going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
Brian's book, Selfish Reasons to Have More Kids, the subtitle is Why Being a Great Parent is Less Work and More Fun Than You Think. My take on this in an article I wrote, Why Have Kids in the 21st Century, is that parenthood is a heck of a lot of work, and it's a heck of a lot of fun. It takes a lot of work, but you fall in love with your kids more than you anticipate that you would.
Hmm. You know, Philip, this notion that you say the most common number of kids that young people anticipate having, you're saying it's two. Did that number used to be higher, 50 years ago? Do we have evidence of that?
Sure, we have a pretty good understanding from looking at countries around the world that have that are at lower levels of economic development, economic and social development. They tend to want more children. People want children of different birth orders for different reasons. The primary reason that people have a first child is because they want to be parents.
Mm-hmm.
They want to have a child to rear. But once you have a kid, you're already a parent. Why would you ever want to have a second? And the answer is, for most people, to have a sibling for the first, so your child won't grow up as an only child, so you hope they'll have a lifelong brother or sister. And then the question is, why would you have a third? Well, you might have a third because you really wanted to have a son and a daughter, and your first two kids mm-hmm. were sons, or your first two kids were daughters. So there's reasons to have a third kid. And then some people have three kids because they do have them in lots. They have a first kid and then a pair of twins next. But why would you have a seventh, eighth, or ninth kid? The reasons for that tend to be arguments about lineage or the notion that kids are really important in an agricultural environment. And in the U.S., for 97% of the population, the agricultural environment disappeared decades ago.
Mm-hmm. You know, Philip, do kids from large families tend to have lots of kids themselves? Is there a direct corollary there?
Well, there's certainly a correlation. Mm-hmm. If you grow up in a large family, you're more likely to have more children yourself. And that's I've actually done some work on that recently. It's not just a U.S. phenomenon. Every country that I look at, there's a modest relationship between the family size of your orientation, the one you grew up in, and the family size of the one you create, your family mm-hmm. size of procreation.
Yeah. That only makes sense, I guess, right?
Yes, and not only is there actually a tendency, but it actually seems to be genetic. So one thing we learn from twin and adoption studies is that if you are the biological child of someone from a large family, you are likely to have more kids, whereas if you are adopted into a large family, probably not.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, let's go.
So they're probably genetic and social reasons that combine to produce
right,
this.
Right, of course. Yeah, there is a genetic factor is the key part.
Yeah. Brian Kaplan, let's come back to you again. Brian is the author of Selfish Reasons to Have More Kids. You know, this number I threw out in the introduction, you come across these numbers, and this one was $1 million today is the cost of raising a child, and that the U.S. Department of Agriculture had a different number, I think $250,000, a quarter of that number just a few weeks ago. Do you have issues with these figures that get tossed around, the cost of raising a kid today, and what do you I understand you have some real questions about that.
Sure. I mean, there's two big problems. One of them is technical, which is it all depends on what interest rate you use. So if you just add up all the money over time and don't consider interest, then you get these enormous inflated numbers.
Uh-huh.
But the deeper problem that I talk about is people act as if the amount of money the typical parent spends has to be spent in order for a child to exist, and it's not true. You don't have to pay for your kid to go to college. There are plenty of other ways they can get financing. Of course, plenty of kids don't go. So when people put these numbers in, they are basically taking for granted that there's a certain one right lifestyle for every person and one right way to raise a child, when in fact most of the spending is totally optional and your kid's going to turn out fine if you do or don't spend it. So you shouldn't beat yourself up if you don't. And you shouldn't say, I don't want to have a kid because I can't give him these things. I mean, the really important thing is just getting to be born, getting to exist. Once you've got that, the difference in what your parents give you or don't give you, in a rich society like ours, is really not very important.
So bottom line is those numbers tend to be inflated, at least in your view, Brian.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay. I mean, they're inflated. Mathematically, just because people often don't put in interest rates, but more importantly, they act as if that whatever most people are spending has to be spent, and it doesn't.
Philip, hop in here.
Sure. I love it when an economist argues that costs are socially constructed. What you have to do for your kid depends upon, time and place, social environment. You can influence that some yourself. In addition, some of these huge numbers are the result of including what's called the opportunity cost of your time, which you've got to be a little careful about that. I mean, it's true if a woman takes off several years to when she's pregnant or when the child is very young or when a man does. It impacts their wages in the short run and possibly in the long run. But to give you an example how you can get carried away with this, I don't play golf often, but I did last week, and it cost me $40. That's what I paid the golf course. But it also took me 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had thought about the cost of playing golf at my consulting time of $200 an hour, I might have decided golf was way too expensive. Or at least if I told you about it, you would say, why would you play golf at that cost? So again, if it's $1 million they're talking about, I guarantee you the biggest component of that cost is the opportunity cost foregone of earning wages of the father and mother.
Yeah, yeah. What do we know, Philip, about how much parents these days weigh the cost of raising a kid as they factor this decision about how big they want their family to be?
Well, they certainly take it into account. Maybe the best way for me to answer that question quickly is often my students in a sociology of the family class, I'll ask them a series of questions about their long-term expectations. How many kids do they want? What kind of career do they want? What are their expectations regarding leisure? And the answer is they'll want all of those things. They want to have two or three kids. They want to be a doctor or a lawyer. And they want to play tennis on the weekends. And there's nothing wrong with wanting all of those things looking forward. But as you live your life, there are constraints. There are only a certain number of hours a day and only a certain number of those hours that we're awake and able to work. So those constraints do cause some trade-offs. And that's what people think about when they think about those trade-offs. I'm not sure they get out their spreadsheets and put in dollar amounts on this side and that. But they do absolutely think about the costs and benefits, and they need to have these conversations with others. I don't agree with everything Brian says in his book, but there are a lot of good ideas in here. It's absolutely the case that people need to sort of check some of these notions that, you know, that the kids are so much work. I mean, a lot of the things that we get the most joy in out of life take a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Brian, what's your sense of how often parents are considering the financial factor here?
I mean, basically for the three-quarters of kids that are planned, then I think it's very important. And the main problem is just that people consider it, but they don't think hard enough about it. So, I mean, I thought it was funny that it was said that, you know, that an economist was saying that the cost is socially constructed. I said, it's actually stronger than that. It's individually constructed. And then people blame society for something that's actually their choice.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like, you know, the fact that, you know, like, I mean, this is the classic, you know, if all the other parents were jumping off the Brooklyn Bridge for you, if all the other parents are spending a ton of money on their kids or driving them all to a bunch of different soccer practices that you don't really enjoy, do you have to do it? The answer is really no. Again, you know, parents often think, well, I'm going to be hurting my kid. There's going to be some terrible long-run damage done. And what we get out of research on twins and kids who are adopted is that's mostly wrong. You know, there's a wide range of ways to raise your kids, and they're all about equally good in terms of how kids turn out. So focus on what's fun.
You know, it's just interesting looking at the Facebook comments coming in to our up-to-date program here today. Candace posts on Facebook. She says, we don't have any because we couldn't afford it. Others should consider the same. And then Emma posts on Facebook. She says, I have two because my husband and I weren't careful. Once you have them, though, it's only more motivation to better your life and get a better job and house and that kind of thing. And interesting point from Emma, too, there. Let me get our listeners to chime in here. What are the main factors that you considered as you decided, went about this decision, how big you wanted your family to be, how much of a factor was money as you weighed all of these different factors? 816-235-2888 is our phone number. We want to hear from you. 816-235-2888. You can also email us at uptodate@kcur.org or tweet us at @kcuruptodate. You know, Brian, one of the things you pointed out in your book, and this just floored me, to be honest with you. You point out that study after study, researchers find that parents are consistently, I couldn't believe this, less happy than non-parents, no matter how you control the sample. If you have two identical people, one with a child and one without kids, the parents without will be 5.6 the parents of the kids will be 5.6 percentage points less happy. Did that surprise you?
No, actually, I mean, it doesn't surprise me because I know a lot of parents, so I see how miserable a lot of parents make themselves. Really, what surprised me is how small the hit to happiness is. I mean, so there's been an enormous amount of news coverage of happiness research on kids saying that parents are miserable. It's not really true. Parents are slightly less happy, which is surprising considering how hard they work themselves. And really, if you just compare the effect of kids on happiness to the effect of some other big things in your life, it's just shocking to me how much negative attention the kids have gotten. By comparison, people who are married are like 20 percentage points more likely to say they're very happy than singles. But there's been almost no news coverage of singles are miserable, poor singles. Mm-hmm. Whereas when parents turn out to be a couple percentage points less likely to be very happy, then that's front page news. So it seems like there is some big bias towards saying, some slight effect of kids on happiness is, incredibly important. We should all talk about it. Whereas many other much bigger effects get almost no attention.
Yeah, I was going to say, Philip, my sense is that if you asked somebody on the street, are parents of kids happier than those without, that the bias would be towards parents. They're going to be the happier ones than those without kids. How do you explain that?
I think you've got to be a little careful of the question that gets asked.
Okay.
I mean, when you ask people about happy, I think they tend to think, well, did I have fun last night or did I laugh a lot? I think if we asked some slightly different questions about did your life have a lot of meaning? Are you satisfied with various aspects of your life? Do you find joy and fulfillment in being a parent? Of course, you can't ask that of a non-parent. But I think on those questions, you would get the kinds of answers that you would expect. I think, again, this boils down to thinking about kids as being a lot of work, but things you absolutely fall heads over heels in love with.
Yeah, of course.
And
yeah.
It's a bit of a balancing act. Which do people respond to? Do they tell you about the work, or do they tell you how much they love their kids?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to hear them talk about how much they love their kids, ask them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Let's go to some phone calls.
I mean, the idea that
kids
make people unhappy is so pronounced in popular culture. If you just take a look at almost any movie or any TV show, the people with kids feel oppressed and dragged down and tied down.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Singles are there laughing and yucking it up. So I say that actually this idea is, you know, it's very well entrenched in our culture. Like, just listen to almost any comedian about how terrible it was once we had kids and they couldn't do anything fun anymore. I mean, really, I think that, you know, this idea that the kids cause unhappiness is very well established, is very, very, very well appreciated.
Yeah.
And a lot of what I try to do is to say, well, sure, first of all, parents aren't nearly as unhappy as you think. But second, and more importantly, so much of their unhappiness is just self-inflicted.
Yeah.
Based upon guilt and these unrealistic standards that they hold themselves to. And if you just get rid of that. I've got four kids. I don't feel guilty. I have a lot of fun with them. I find things that are fun. I don't go and try to make them do things that they don't want to do and I don't enjoy. And like, what's the point?
Yeah. Lots of phone calls. The question on the table here, how did you decide how big you wanted your family to be? Our board is full right now. If you want to send us an email, updatedate@kcur.org, we'd like to hear from you. Let's go to Julie from Kansas City, Kansas. Julie, good morning.
Good morning. I am the oldest of 12 children.
Wow.
And I only have two. And I found when I was growing up that we were very poor. And with 12 children and being poor and not having enough food and so forth, it's not a very pleasant environment. And there's a big difference between having four and having a lot of fun with four kids as opposed to 12 and not having enough work. So that's my comment.
Julie, I can't imagine having 12 kids. And so
I hope most people can't.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's very hard on all the children, because there's not enough time to actually sit down and spend time with your kids and to love them. So thank you for your program.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Julie, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Let's go to Bruce from Overland Park. Bruce, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. I came from a family of four. I have four siblings. Or three siblings, actually, and I have three children, and I had two to start with, without considering economics and things like that. And then after two, it seemed that was sufficient because the work to raise them was substantial. And then 6.5 years later, we had a third, and. I didn't really consider the economics. It was really more raising the children in a way that's, you know, beneficial for them and society.
Yeah, I just wonder, you raise an interesting point, Bruce. I wonder how often parents really do consider the financial aspect of it. I mean, I'm not sure I did. I knew it was going to be an issue, but I, you know, that wasn't really foremost in my thinking at all. And Philip, what about that? You there, Phil?
Sorry, this.
Yeah,
I am. Again, I don't think people are using spreadsheets and doing the calculations,
yeah.
But I do think they're thinking about the trade-offs when they have,
yes.
When they have children.
And Brian, your response to that is?
I mean, sure, of course, people do. Really, a lot of what I wanted to do in my book is just to help people to do it better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one thing to say that people are thinking about it, but. I mean, especially like, you know, all of this research on twins and kids who are adopted, you know, it's very, very, you know, very few people know about it. There's a very popular view that the way that successful families get successful kids is by pouring a ton of resources and time and pain and suffering and sacrifice into them. And yet the evidence, when we really are able to sort out biology from upbringing, is that it's really the biology that's leading kids from more successful families to be more successful. So you don't really, if you want to go and pour more resources in your kid, it's, you know, you may have fun while you're doing it. If he likes doing the thing, you may have fun. But if you don't, it's not really working.
So, Brian Kaplan, then, where does parenting make a difference in your view?
So, I mean, the most important thing for me is just is the relationship with your child. Mm-hmm. When I was writing the book, I came across something called the Children's Survey, where they asked kids to grade their parents. Now, most of the parents thought the kids would be complaining their parents didn't spend enough time with them, but that was a very rare complaint. Most of the kids' complaints were that their parents were too tired and angry. So when you look at that and you realize, you know, they have a lot of parents
really
who are making sacrifices for their kids, but the kids just feel kind of oppressed and picked on and unhappy about it. And really, if you want to have, you know, like really what you have a big effect on with your kids is just, you know, the quality of the relationship. Like, you know, do you do fun things together? Does your child feel loved? And this also, you know, has been borne out by research on twins. So there was this great study of Swedish twins that found that, you know, there were some of the twins that had been raised together, some had actually been separated when at birth or when they were very young. And what they found is that one of the areas where there is a substantial effect on parenting is just how your child feels about and remembers you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the twins that were raised together had pretty similar views about what kind of people their parents were, whether they were kind, whether they spent time with them. And, of course, the twins who grew up in different households didn't generally agree because they were raised by different people who had different attitudes and different philosophies about how to raise your kids.
You know, Brian, in Selfish Reasons to Have More Kids, you know, you argue that parents who do the whole, you know, we're going to go to piano lessons now and we're going to drive our kids hard and do all that stuff.
Tiger moms,
you sort of advocate an approach that could be described as very much the opposite of that. What do you mean?
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, once you realize that you don't have very much effect upon your kids' long-run outcomes, then the natural thing to do is to focus on the relationship and enjoying today. So, I mean, that's what I really push, is finding things that you like doing with your kids, finding things that you enjoy together, and doing them. And just realizing that, you know, just because other people's kids are going to soccer and the parents go to the games doesn't mean that you and your kids have to do it. If your kid doesn't really like it and you don't like it, you don't have to feel guilty about not doing it. I mean, one thing that's really striking, you know, whenever a parent tells me I have to go to my kid's karate practice or whatever, I usually ask, so does your kid like karate? And at least half the time they say, no, I have to drag him there every time. I'm like, well, do you like going to his karate games? Like, God, no, I don't like going. It's really boring. Then why are you doing it? Well, if you don't do karate, you know, what's going to happen to him in the future?
Right, right.
And I say, what's going to happen in the future is pretty much the same thing that's going to happen if he doesn't go. So really, just relax.
Yeah. You know, Philip, this notion that the job of being a parent is so arduous that people are turning away from it, what do we know about how what impact that factor is having on this decision of how many kids parents want to have?
Well, I do want to weigh in and say that there's a lot of people who think that parents have more influence on kids than Brian does. The literature is complicated. I mean, drawing everything down to twin studies is tough. I'm not a genetics expert. I do know genetics are important. Epigenetics are also important, which means that it's not a genetic or a social effect. It's a combination of the two. But your larger question, and really Brian's, you know, bigger point, is that to some extent, the costs of children we create by the decisions of what we're going to do for them, and that it does make sense to think about what's really important for the kids. Well, a great way to answer your question, one of you mentioned tiger moms.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the notion, where is fertility really low in the world? Actually, in the United States, the United States has the highest fertility in the developed world. The places it's really low are where people have taken this, this, you know, training of your kids at a young age to its extreme, in places like Taiwan and Japan and South Korea, where parents have their kids go to kindergarten and go to school, and then after school they go to after school school, mm-hmm. and then after school they work on their studies even more.
So fertility is low in those.
They're investing so heavily in those kids that people there are really only the total fertility rate in Taiwan is around one birth. That means the average woman is having one birth.
And you explain
in the US,
that how
it's much closer to two.
You explain that how.
Well, it's the the notion that how many children can we afford?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're investing that heavily in your children, you can only afford one.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And also, you know, parenting is just pretty miserable when you do it that way.
Yeah.
You read Amy Chua's Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother. The whole book is about how unhappy she is. And
she's
how
been here.
She has to scream at her kids every day, and and she's always comparing herself to the lucky parents who aren't tiger moms, who get to relax and have a glass of champagne, and how she doesn't get to do that. And just the bitterness that especially her younger daughter expresses towards her in the book. If you're a parent and your kid is saying, I hate you, of course it's not going to be a lot of fun. And why would you want to have a lot of kids like that?
The question on the table here, how did you decide how big you wanted your family to be? We're spinning off a series that PRI's The World is now airing. How big do you want your family to be? 816-235-2888 and our email address updatedate@kcur.org. Let's grab one more call before a break here. And Becky from Parkville, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for holding on, Becky.
My husband and I came to parenting through adoption. We adopted twice. We did not pursue any fertility stuff. It just didn't happen. And so we were like, you know what? We want to be parents. I don't want to be pregnant. I want to be a parent. So we went through it twice. It was affordable for us, very lucky. And then we decided, you know what? At our age, we're done. And my husband got a vasectomy. Because I did not want to have the menopause baby, the one where you hit your 40s and you think you're in menopause and you find out, surprise, you're pregnant. Yeah, we did not want to risk that. And so it's strange to a lot of people that we know in the adoption world that we would actually choose to make sure we don't get pregnant. But we made that decision because we thought it wouldn't be good for us, it wouldn't be good for the child or our family as a whole.
And how do you feel about your decision now that you've made it?
Very happy because I don't think that I could stay up all night with an infant again. I couldn't start from scratch again. It's so much hard work to be at that phase. Those first 3 years are hard, hard work.
Yeah.
And you have to understand that going into it.
All right. Becky, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about how big you want your family to be. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Well, this hour we're talking about family size. How big do you want your family to be and the different factors that go into making these very crucial decisions? Our guest, Brian Kaplan, is the author of Selfish Reasons to Have More Kids, Why Being a Great Parent is Less Work and More Fun Than You Think. He's also a professor at George Mason University in Virginia. S. Philip Morgan is a professor of sociology. He's director of the Carolina Population Center at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. You know, Brian, you talk in your book about this idea, you've been expressing it here, that parents can have a better life and a bigger family if they just admit that their kids' future is not in their own hands. This idea that maybe they're not quite the factors that we all tend to think we are and what kind of people our kids turn out to be. That's a pretty liberating idea. And I'm wondering what kind of response you've had about that sort of philosophy in the wake of the whole tiger mom syndrome.
I mean, the people who talk to me, of course, tend to be people who like it.
Yeah, sure.
So, I get a lot of people saying, I don't want to be a tiger mom, and I'm really glad to just have fun with my kids. I mean, every now and then I do meet someone who is a real tiger mom, and normally they just are very stubborn in terms of the facts. So even though with their own firsthand experience they see that often they failed to change their kids, they're still convinced that if they had just worked a little bit harder, then it all would have worked out.
Mm-hmm.
Even tiger mom Amy Chua, in the end, her daughter wins the fight, and she gets to quit piano and she gets to quit violin.
Yeah, yeah.
And it took years and years went into this, and yet Amy just can't quite accept the idea. Well, maybe it was all for nothing. Or the time that I had a chance to argue over Skype with Amy, I pointed out that you know, Amy said that she, you know, she could never let her mother-in-law have a full day with her daughters because her mother-in-law was like a hippie mom, and she knew, and like she knew that her mother-in-law's technique was doomed to fail. And yet I had to say, look, this woman raised your husband, who, like you, is a law professor at Yale and a best-selling author. So how can you say it's doomed to fail? It's not doomed to fail.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She really didn't have any answer for that.
Philip Morgan, we had this email from a listener. My cousin and her husband are not having children because of the environmental reason. They feel the huge population is just too much of a strain. I'm sort of wondering about this notion that, you know, the world's going to heck in a handbasket, if how much of a factor that may be in when parents make these decisions.
Well, my initial reaction is I don't believe it. I mean, I don't believe that's really the reason they're not having kids. It can be a factor, but people tend not to have kids in order to make their country stronger, to make the world a better place. Usually decisions about kids are much more personal, about wanting to have a child to raise and fall in love with, to have siblings for that first child. Those are the reasons. Now, there was, I think when people think initially about if they don't have any children, what size family do they have? I think they may well say, I want a small family because it's – and one of the reasons would be, and a socially acceptable reason to say you don't want a large number of kids, if it's environmentally has environmental negative consequences.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't – I think we have to remember that when we ask people questions, there are often lots of reasons back there, and often the ones they tell us about are the ones that they think are socially acceptable that other people approve of.
All right. Back to some calls at 816-235-2888. Solo from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Yeah, I kind of have a common question. You know, my mother, she was raised with 14 children in her family, you know, and she ended up, you know, growing up but not that smart in her family and, you know, being on government assistance and help, you know, raising me and my brothers and sisters. And, you know, that kind of figured that, you know, having a big family, that takes a lot out of, you know, the needs of a kid, you know, as they grow up. And the other question I had was that, you know, I understand, you know, you can't stop kids from coming into this world because you have to bring them into this world. But if you have a choice, you know, to not have a kid, you know, I kind of feel like you need to really look at the big picture instead of the small picture of how happy you'll be with the kid. The big picture, as in, like, what's going on in the world, what the future will be like, you know, as to far as, you know, what's going on in different countries, what kind of status they're in, what they're going through, what could happen
right
on this side of town. You know what I mean?
I do. So, let me get some responses. Philip Morgan says he doesn't think that's a factor. Brian Kaplan, what do you think about the world's going to heck in a handbasket, that factor, and how much people weigh that?
I think actually they do weigh it a fair amount. So, I mean, I think Phil would agree that religion has a big effect on how many kids people have. And if you think about environmentalism as being a kind of secular religion that some people use to fill the same role as religion does for other people,
mm-hmm.
It's very believable to me that that does have an effect. A lot of what I do in my book is to say, look, there are these environmental costs that kids have, but there's also a lot of social benefits that people very, very rarely talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, there's a lot of ways that economists have figured out where you can reduce the negatives of people without getting rid of the big positive of getting to be alive. So you could either say, let's not have another person, or you could say, let's have a pollution tax. Which one, so it seems like the second one is a much more reasonable solution than saying don't exist at all because you're going to drive a car.
Yeah, I think I thought about it before we had kids. I lost the argument, but it was a concern to me, much more so than the financial factor was. We have an email here from Teresa who wrote us this observation. My husband and I don't have kids and have never wanted kids and couldn't be happier with our lives. Every time I get together with girlfriends who have children, they complain about how tired they are, how unhelpful their husbands are, how much they miss their own identity and their own careers, and how much they stress over finances, childcare, healthcare, and all that stuff. Too many people have children because it's the next step versus really thinking about whether or not it's the right choice for them. Amy and Lee Summit came back with a different response. She says, we have 6 kids. Most of them are adopted. We are financially comfortable but choose to live below our means, so our children learn what's really important. Financial considerations were not part of our decision of how many kids to have. We have chosen to have a big family because there are children that need a family and we can provide just that. Okay, back to some phone calls here. Our topic today, how big do you want your family to be? Michael from Lawrence. Michael, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Michael.
I want to ask, what consideration have you given, Brian, to the idea that what a child may bring into this existence from a previous life? That is, assuming that there is one.
Hmm. Brian?
Do you mean reincarnation?
Reincarnation. Is that what you're talking about, Michael?
Well, yes.
Boy, okay.
I guess I haven't thought about it at all. It seems quite unlikely that people are being reborn into new lives, but I guess anything's possible.
Yeah, I guess that's right. Okay, let's go to another Michael here from Lenexa. Michael, good morning.
And we're starting over here?
Yeah, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I'm an ex-airline pilot. Became a stay-at-home dad with twin girls, and they're very different. They're 10 years old now. And in my marriage, we had a helicopter mom, and then I'm pretty laid back. And I spend a lot of time with them doing a lot of outdoor things. Both my girls are top math students in their class because of the work that I've done with them. And I'm a single dad. So one of your callers talked about, this first 3 years being extremely hard. Yes, they are. And this is coming from a guy who in the beginning was after a career, wanted to fly airplanes, had no aspirations to ever have kids. But because of the woman and the commitment I made, I could not prevent her from her goals. And so that was the reason for us having kids, or at least my reason for allowing that to happen. And as soon as they put that little 3-pound, 9-ounce baby and the 5-ounce baby in my arms, immediately the tears just started flowing. And just fell in love with them instantaneously starting on that day.
Michael, that's a great story. Thank you for making the call. I appreciate it.
Sure, and I want to give a shout out to all the dads out there. Keep having fun time with your girls or your boys. It pays off. It'll pay off. And my girls, when I walk into the school, it's apparent who the cool dad of the school is.
All right, Michael. Thank you for the call. Philip Morgan, this notion of urban dwellers having smaller families, rural folks having larger families, why is that, and what are the trends today showing you as you look at the stats out there?
Well, there's not a huge difference any longer between rural and urban. There's some because, again, the costs may be somewhat different. Some of the rural folks probably do have more activities the children can be helpful doing. But the bottom line, the costs are pretty much the same of raising kids now. Very few people actually have farm lives where children can be active participants in the work of the family. If you want to see that a large differentials in fertility, you look cross nationally. You look to nations that are at much lower levels of social and economic development, and that's where you have the big families.
Okay. Back to some calls here. Let's go to Sean from Kansas City, Missouri. Our topic today, how big do you want your family to be? Our phone number, 816-235-2888. Sean, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Sean.
We wanted to have four kids, three or four. We were foster parents, and we adopted four, and then ended up with two more and ended up with six, which is kind of the maximum the state allows. And we're very happy with it. We live a little below our means, the people in Lee Summit that you were talking to.
Yes, right.
I was curious, what's the largest family? I have a friend with 25 kids.
Whoa.
I was wondering, and I found out, 2 days ago, they're going to adopt another one. What's the largest family you've had?
Philip Morgan, what's the biggest family you've come across in your research?
But there's a woman who had over 60 babies.
60?
Oh.
Yes,
60.
This isn't the Guinness Book of World Records, but there's a lot of evidence to support this is true, incredibly rare. But this woman, I think, had something like 20 pregnancies and over 60 babies. She had lots of twins and triplets. Again, we're talking about, there are billions of people in the world. But it's possible. What are people's, people can have a baby a year, and women are fecund, or they're able to have babies for 30 years. So you could potentially have 30 live births. So one of the interesting questions, I know we don't have time for it today, is given the potential to have so many children, why do people have so few?
Yeah.
Even 7, 8, and 9 is a lot of kids, but it's far fewer than women could potentially have.
Absolutely.
And we're I'm not encouraging 60 kids.
Thank you for that, Philip. I appreciate it. I want to thank S. Philip Morgan, a professor of sociology, director of the Carolina Population Center, for joining us today. Brian Kaplan, author of Selfish Reasons to Have More Kids, Why Being a Great Parent is Less Work and More Fun Than You Think. And thank you both very much for your time today. I appreciate it.